Hi, my name is Marquez Brownlee, and I have not paid for electricity in a year. I have a bunch of electrical appliances, computers, game console, TVs, air conditioning, and I drive an electric car to and from work every single day and charge at home. $0 bill. So I know I had a lot of questions about how this stuff worked, how much it cost, how much it generated, a whole bunch of that stuff before I got started, and now I finally have all the answers. Let's get into it. So I have had solar panels on my roof at home for the past 12 months now, and I waited this long specifically because now I've seen all four seasons and I've observed a wide variety of performance, and I've run all the numbers and I have a lot of thoughts about them. So I want to share them. So first of all, for those familiar, there are a lot of options for solar systems at home. I like that they're called solar systems too. But there are a lot of different companies who make solar systems to power all the electrical needs of a home, including an electric car. So I know I wanted to do this for a while, since the whole point for me was to be able to drive electric for the foreseeable future and actually be able to know that the energy is coming from a sustainable source, the sun. But first, it's actually important to understand that a big part of this solar system is batteries as well. So a normal house is connected to the electrical grid, and whenever something in the house, whether it's a light bulb or a computer or an appliance, calls for electricity, it pulls from the grid and spins up a meter on the side of the house that tallies how much you've pulled. Then at the end of the month, you get billed for how much electricity you've used. Great. Now, if you just add solar panels to this house, when the sun shines during the day on those tiles, it can use that electricity to directly power things in the house. Now, of course, if it's cloudy or if you have a bunch of stuff on all at once and the demand is more than the power from the sun is providing, then it'll pull the rest of what it needs from the grid and spin the meter as well. But most importantly, as soon as the sun goes down, the electricity generated goes to zero. And it just so happens that most people come home from work as the sun is going down, and that's when they turn on all the lights and do the laundry and charge the car, etc. So you're still going to be pulling from the grid for most stuff. Now, that's actually fine for most people, because if the goal, which a lot of people's goal is to have a $0 electricity bill, then this can actually be accomplished, because the power company will hopefully, depending on where you live, but ideally be running something called net metering. So what this means is when the sun shines on the roof and excess electricity is being generated because nobody's home, the house actually spins the electrical meter backwards as it sends extra electricity back to the grid. Then when the sun goes down and you get home and use a bunch of electricity from the grid, the meter spins back forwards. And so ideally the total usage is zero, net zero. That's how you end up with the $0 electricity bill, which is super cool. But what if you want to sort of graduate to the next level of sustainability? What if you want to be completely independent of the grid, totally off the grid? Well, that's when batteries come in. So add battery storage to this system, and now the loop is complete. So when the sun shines during the day and you're not home, it fills up the batteries, effectively storing sunshine energy. And then when you get home and the sun goes down, you can keep using that extra solar energy that you stored with all the electrical needs that you have until the next morning when the sun comes out again and starts filling up those batteries again. So with a system like this, you can theoretically not just have a $0 power bill, but never actually pull from the grid at all. You're completely self-sustainable. You never have to worry about a power outage ever again. You won't even know if a power outage happens. That is the off-the-grid dream, theoretically anyway. At the beginning of this process, that was my goal. So there's a lot of different options for solar system setups with different solar tile manufacturers and different battery manufacturers and different companies that will install all these things. And there's 1,000 different combos that you could piece together with different companies with different offers in your area to make something that works. I kind of went with kind of a crazy but also a made sense solution, which is just one company for everything, which would be Tesla. So it is a Tesla solar roof, Tesla power walls for batteries, and then the Tesla app to monitor and control everything. And really the main reason I went this route was for simplicity and integration. I paid a price premium for this. This was not the cheapest option. You can spec a much cheaper combo of solar panels and batteries and things like that. But just to have everything on the same page and have everything talking to each other seamlessly, this made the most sense. So then once I decided to go with Tesla, then the other choice you might have heard about is either solar panels bolted to the roof or these actual solar tiles, which are new roof tiles that are actually hundreds of tiny solar panels themselves, all interconnected to make a normal looking roof that's actually a giant solar panel. And that is the one that I went for. And this is why I say this was a crazy option, because I did not actually need a new roof. Most people who go with the solar tiles option would either have an old roof that needs replacing soon, or they're like about to build a new house and this will be the new roof that they put on it. I wasn't in either of those situations, but also this was the way to get by far the largest total array with the most coverage, with as many pitches as my roof has. And also aesthetically, it looks really good too, I gotta say. There's curb appeal. Either way, I make my decision. I'm going with the solar roof. I'm going Tesla's full integrated setup. From there, not gonna lie, it is quite a process. There is a lot of paperwork and hoops to jump through. Also with Teslas, they've been kind of in and out of reliability. Like over the years, they've been on and off with actually making this product. They've paused installations for a while. It was briefly canceled and then it came back and there were supply chain issues. I remember reading about all this and I was kind of worried. But for whatever reason, when I ordered, which was in 2021, basically everything went perfectly smooth, as well as it could have gone. You get assigned a Tesla advisor just like for your project, for your solar project. They walk you through the whole process from the paperwork with the town from beginning to end. So there was an ordering process, inspection, a measuring process, quotes, you know, filling out paperwork with the town. You actually, when you're first trying to get an estimate, you actually submit your address and they go look on Google Images and look at your roof with satellite imagery and give you an initial quote. Then once you're locked in and you decide you want to go through with it, they'll actually come to your home with professionals and actually measure it and then give you a precise real quote and then start to order all the materials. You eventually get to the point where you get an install date, you start scheduling things out, and then they come through with all the boxes of solar panels and they took up my whole driveway for a couple days. There are people who have actually walked through this entire process in great detail. I'll try to link a good one below on YouTube. But at the end of the day, for me, the process, I started when I signed the purchase agreement, which was in November 2021, and finished with the activation of the system in July 2022. So 8 months. But now that it's done, we get to nerd out about the numbers. Sorry in advance to anyone who doesn't like numbers. I feel like that's really the only way to explain how good it is and what's happening with them. So there's about to be a lot of them. Let's get into it. So first of all, the specs, right? So this is a 29.313 kilowatt solar array size. Your boy's got a big roof. And then there are three Powerwall 3s, which totals 40.5 kilowatt hours. And then this is the Tesla app where all of the learnings and all of the numbers happen. When the system first got activated, I just remember like seeing it light up in the app for the first time, the numbers jump up and just kind of, I could stare at the app for a while. Like I could really get lost in the numbers. Maybe it's just because I'm a numbers person, but there's a lot going on and it was exciting to see it all in real time and learn a lot of stuff. So I think the app is really well done and it lets you visualize how much energy the solar array is currently capturing, how much energy the home is using, and the state of charge and power output or input of the Powerwall batteries. And then of course, anything happening with the electrical grid. So you can see at this exact moment in time on a sunny morning in July, the panels are bringing in 7 kilowatts of power, 5 of which are powering the house, the last 2 of which are going into the Powerwalls, which are 38% full, and it's not touching the grid at all. There's already a lot of terms being thrown around here. Here's a good way of thinking about it. Kilowatts is a measure of power. So 1 kilowatt is 1,000 watts. A kilowatt hour though is a unit of energy collected. So a Tesla Model S battery, for example, is roughly 100 kilowatt hours. And so if that battery were to output 100 kilowatts for an hour, then it would be at zero. So for my setup, the Powerwall 3, each one is about 13.5 kilowatt hours each. So that totals 40.5 kilowatt hours since I have three. And they support a maximum power output in or out of 15.5 kilowatts. And then the solar system being 29.3 kilowatts means that basically it seems like the theoretical maximum of the electricity that can be collected at any one time is 29.3 kilowatts. But as you're about to see a little bit later, that number may or may not be accurate. Either way, just hanging out in the Tesla app for a while which you do a lot for the first few weeks, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about what takes a lot of energy, what takes a little bit of energy, some of it, which did surprise me. I also learned that sort of the basic, like, existence level for this house is like 400 watts of power, just because things are plugged in. Even if every light is off, it just sort of sits around 400 watts. But, you know, charging a phone or turning on a light or something like that basically doesn't make a dent at all. It doesn't show up in the app. Turning on a TV might only take about 100 watts or 0.1 kilowatts. A computer can pull 300 to 500 watts if it's taking a lot of power. But surprisingly, the big spikes come from the microwave and the toaster, for sure. But the two absolute biggest draws of electricity in this house, by far, and I think probably with a lot of others, are number two, air conditioning, and number one, by a country mile, is charging the electric car. I think the best way to look at this is actually by seasons. So like I said, the system got activated in July, so in the middle of the summer. So a typical summer day in New Jersey is pretty awesome for a solar customer. The days are long, we get a lot of sun, it's great. This is what a summer day looks like in the app. And this is a pretty good day for solar, so you can see the sunrise is around 6 a.m., the peak is around noon, and then this drop off till sunset around 8 to 9 p.m., it's a lot of sun. And on this day, it generated a ridiculous 260 kilowatt hours of electricity. Not all days are gonna look like perfect curves like this, by the way. In fact, the previous day was pretty cloudy, so you can see it only generated 65 kilowatt hours. The next previous was better again. But yeah, a typical summer day, you know, get around 200 kilowatt hours from the sun. And then I think this view is the most helpful. It looks kind of wild at first, but you can quickly tell how to read it. It's basically how much power the house is taking and then where it's getting that power from. So overnight, you can see these spikes from the house are where I'm pulling from the grid. This is actually just air conditioning overnight. Then when the sun comes out and the day heats up and the air conditioner turns on, the lights and the appliances, everything comes on, it starts drawing more power, but it's totally covered by solar, as you can see here. And it's also filling up the power walls with extra solar as this happens. So later in the day, when the sun goes down, that power draw is also supplemented by the power wall batteries. There were a lot of summer days like this. On the absolute best day in this time, I think I generated almost 300 kilowatt hours of electricity. But because of how much the house is using, from the AC to charging the car every single day, frequently I'd use 200 plus kilowatt hours of electricity during the day. So my net grid usage would typically in these summer months be zero to slightly negative, maybe up to negative 50 kilowatt hours on a good day, meaning I would generate and sell back to the grid 50 kilowatt hours more than I used. Solid. So after summer, there is the fall, which, you know, the days are starting to get a little bit shorter, but also notably, the temperatures drop off quite a bit. So getting less, a little bit less sun, but also using a lot less air conditioning. So here is a normal fall day in the middle of October. Production day by day is dropping down now here into the low hundreds. This is the day that I got just over 120 kilowatt hours of solar. Pretty cloud free day again, as you can tell by the graph. And again, if you look at the home usage, there's even smaller spikes and a smaller curve of air conditioning during the day. So the house's needs are actually completely covered by solar. And then once the sun goes down and the power wall takes over, it actually did not touch the grid at all, which is pretty sick. And this was actually very common throughout the fall. Turns out the fall and the spring are the times where I generated the most excess electricity, with basically every day ending with net negative. And then there is winter. And it turns out winter can be, in the Northeast here, is especially brutal on these setups for a couple of reasons. Like, first of all, as far as solar, these are the days when the days are the shortest. Like, the sun sets at like 4 p.m., which is insane, but that's real. But it also turns out that most of the days are cloudy. I didn't really realize this, like, truly until I started looking through all of the graphs, but it's like one out of every 10 days is actually sunny. And I know it's cold and everything, but I didn't realize how many days in the winter are just cloud cover all day. So then also, my home's, I'm pointing like you can see it, my home's air conditioning is electric, but my heating is natural gas. So my natural gas bill is just going up and there's nothing my solar can do about it. But on top of all that, you gotta think about the car. And electric cars are far less efficient in the winter when it's cold than any other time of the year. Batteries have a certain temperature they like to be at. They like to operate at that temperature, so they spend more extra energy getting up to and staying at that temperature. So a normal drive for me might take, say, 15% of the battery on a commute during the summer. That same drive during the winter will take 20, 25, 30% of the battery driving the exact same way just because it's so cold. So that is a lot more electrical energy. So here's what some typical days in the winter would look like. Literally only generating 20 to 70 kilowatt hours of electricity in a whole day. Like cloudy days would literally only be a handful. And then for home use, so I actually went through this phase of like, maybe I should charge my car less often to be off the grid more. I was kind of playing around with that. So I would charge like every 2 to 3 days, but it honestly doesn't really matter. You can sort of see which days I actually plug the car in. And to be fair, the Powerwall handled it, but it did empty it out. So the next day I'm pulling from the grid until the sun comes up. So it was basically like a lot of days around zero. And then every time I had to plug in the car to fill back up, there would be a huge dent, just a huge positive net use day on the calendar. So I actually had positive net grid usage months for all of November, December, and January. So I was pulling from the grid more than I produced solar all of those months. But then sure enough, when we get to spring, things flip super fast. It turns out, if you were to guess which month I would generate the most solar or the most excess solar, what would you think? You'd probably guess like sometime in the peak of the summer with the longest day, June, July. For me, it was May. In May, I used 6,500 kilowatt hours of electricity, but I generated nearly 8,500 kilowatt hours of electricity. And I didn't even realize, this is another thing you don't really know for real until you look at the data, and I'm looking at the graphs, and May had basically every single day sunny during that month. I think I had one cloudy day in May. But June and July, we do get a lot more thunderstorms out here in the Northeast, and that actually does take a real hit on total solar. That's cloud cover. So they didn't generate quite as much solar as May. We're just learning weather patterns out here through graphs of solar generation. This is also around the same month that I got the 8 Sleep. So the 8 Sleep is a pod cover that fits on a mattress like a fitted sheet, but it's temperature controlled, so it can heat and cool each side of the bed independently. They reached out around May to be a sponsor, and I said yes, so that's when I installed it. I wouldn't say it replaced the need for air conditioning, it didn't, but it did actually legitimately decrease the total air conditioning you need when the bed is cooled off and the house doesn't have to be as cool. So when it literally cools the bed before you get in, stays cool the whole night for optimal sleep, and then warms you up in the morning on autopilot every single day, which is sweet. So now that I know that air conditioning is the number two draw of electricity in my entire house, and if you don't drive an electric car, it's probably your number one draw, then it's good to know that you can do something like this, and obviously it'll take a lot less electricity from the wall than air conditioning would. Also, if you're curious, I talked about this on Dope Tech, but it's turned out to be pretty awesome. Obviously, sleep is super important, and temperature is like top of the list for sleep quality, falling asleep faster, waking up less. So investing in your sleep makes a ton of sense, on top of maybe cutting into your AC use. So if you want to get a pod cover for yourself, you can actually use code MKBHD on their site and get $200 off. So I'll leave a link in the description, and thanks again to 8 Sleep for sponsoring the video. So it's time for the big summary. I've had this solar setup for a full year now. Now, all four seasons, it's time to run the numbers, see if it was really worth it, and see if it's actually good. So let's start with the money question here. This, like I said, was nowhere near the cheapest possible option, of course, going with solar panels and batteries, a lot of different possible setups. So my setup with the solar tiles, all of the materials, all of the labor, installation, everything, and the three batteries, everything together was $120,948.04. But also, as you can see, there's a federal tax credit down here of nearly $30,000, bringing the total cost to me down to right around $93,000. So the tax credit does fluctuate quite a bit. It's actually gone up like a lot since I ordered like a year and a half ago, whatever it was. It's up to 30% now in New Jersey. So it's called the New Jersey Solar Investment Tax Credit. If I ordered today, it would have been $8,000 more off. But, you know, it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm not mad. It's fine. But the main question you typically see with an investment like this is, what is the payoff period? How long does it take before that investment pays for itself in saved electricity? So that's a good question. And I had to do quite a bit of math here because every bill is different. Every week, every month of electricity costs different amounts. Actually, my provider literally has different electricity rates every single hour, and there are different averages per day, per week, per season. But if I do a sort of a sweeping average for each month and how much electricity I've been using, the 54 megawatt hours of electricity that I've used in the past year would have cost about $9,660. So again, it's a lot, but obviously air conditioning takes up a lot, and a lot of that is driving an electric car every single day. So of course my gas bill has been $0 this whole time, but you know, that's where it comes from. So if you divide that out by the total cost that I paid, it comes out to just under 10 years, 9.6 years. So if you Google like, what's a good payback period for a solar setup? The answer that the AI pops up with is like 6 to 10 years, which, you know, if I think about it, makes sense, obviously. And that's great because if the panels are warrantied for 25 years and you pay them off in 10 years, then they're just paying you extra for the next 15 years, however long you're in that house, which is great. So mine being on the longer end of that, am I mad at that? Not really. I think that's fine. I also do know that there are a couple of things that could have been different to make that payback period shorter. Now, actually, the number one suggestion typically would be like, okay, if you want to make the payback period shorter, get a less expensive setup. And that would make sense, but also you have to keep in mind, the coverage really matters here. So I could have gone with a much less expensive, actually a solar panel array from Tesla on this same exact roof. And because of all the pitches on the roof, they estimated they could have put panels down on certain parts and it would have totaled a smaller 19 kilowatt array instead of the 29 kilowatts of the solar tiles. I know that because that's actually what I first signed up for an estimate for as I was like juggling the idea in my head. Would that have had a shorter payback period, or would that have been offset by much less electricity being produced and taking longer to pay for itself? I don't know. But the other part of that equation that I'm thinking about now is just like, I should just use more electricity so that it pays for itself faster. I want to get my value's worth. I am constantly in net negative, so I can afford to use way more electricity. And so I thought maybe about switching various appliances that aren't electric yet, maybe even switching heating to electrical. So that may be in my future. But now for all of the miscellaneous weird quirks of having this brand new piece of tech on top of my house, because believe me, there are quite a few. So first of all, on the $0 electricity bill for the whole year, that is real, which is pretty awesome. But it's also interesting that I was able to achieve the $0 bill monthly, but I also used positive net grid energy for those 3 months during the winter. So you might be wondering, wait a second, how does that work? And the answer is net metering credits. It turns out they roll over month to month, but then they get reset once per year. So meaning when it was first activated and in the first full month of August, I produced more than I used, I ended the month with a credit of the difference, which was negative 255 kilowatt hours. And it says that on the bill. So that means the next month, even if I used 255 kilowatt hours more than I produced with solar, I would still have a $0 bill because I have that credit to play with. But month after month after month during the summer and then the fall, I was building up more and more negative credit so that by the time we got to winter, those 3 months in a row, I was eating into the credit, but I didn't eat all of it. So I didn't get all the way back to zero. So the bill was still $0 every month. So then another fun thing, power outages. I have had a few power outages since getting the solar system installed, most of them just because of thunderstorms and the grid going down for a bit. I didn't even notice, which was pretty sick. I did not notice, the lights didn't even flicker. I didn't actually know until I got a notification on my phone from the Tesla app saying, hey, just so you know, you're disconnected from the grid right now, but you're running off of solar and or batteries right now. So everything is good and you've got, you know, X amount of hours of backup left and it should get you till the next morning when the sun comes up again. And there's even a storm watch feature that will preemptively make sure the power walls are full if it knows a big storm is coming. And honestly, there is a pretty sweet peace of mind knowing for a fact that if I don't charge the car, the power walls have more than enough to just use the house like normal until the next morning, air conditioning, appliances, literally whatever, and it'll be fine. And when the sun comes out again, it'll start powering everything. I could be completely off the grid for days or weeks at a time if I find somewhere else to charge the car. Now, another fun fact. In the winter, in the Northeast, you probably already know, we get snow. And apparently, the surface of the solar tiles, the solar roof, stays just above freezing, just a little bit warmer than a roof would, which has some interesting side effects. Most notably, when it snows a little bit, the snow simply hits the roof and melts. So it never actually accumulates on the roof, and then the solar can continue to work. I mean, if it's cloudy, you get a little bit of solar, but it keeps working, and then you're the only house that doesn't have a white roof because there's no snow on it. But when it snows heavy, like a lot, which it does a few times, what happens is it snows a ton and it actually does accumulate, and then when it accumulates, the outside layer kind of insulates the bottom, and so the bottom now has room to get warm again, and so it warms up and creates a thin layer of water, and then the whole thing just slides off of the roof like a sheet of ice. Like, the whole accumulated layer slides off on the water. So I didn't actually get videos of this happening with my own roof, but there are some YouTube videos of this happening on YouTube. It's kind of crazy. Literally, the whole roof section slides off in sheets, and it actually lands in piles around the house, sometimes blocking a door or a driveway. It's not a small deal. It was a little bit frightening the first time it happened because I didn't realize what that loud booming noise was. I was like, is there thunder in a snowstorm? That's kind of weird. But then I like see it in the window, like slotting off of the roof, which is crazy. Then it piles up around the door, and then I gotta shovel it. But then last but not least, the fun fact, I lied to you all. The $0 power bill is actually kind of a lie because my power company ruined it. Every month for the past 12 months, my electricity bill has been $5.75. That's just because I have zeroed out all the charges thanks to net metering, but they charge $5.75 every month basically just to have an account. So, thanks, guys. So, let's just to wrap everything up here, my one-year conclusion. This is an awesome piece of bleeding-edge tech. You can tell it's bleeding-edge because it's still rapidly evolving over time, and it's still very expensive. So for early adopters like me who are willing to take the plunge, willing to take that risk a little bit, it can be really awesome. It kind of reminds me of electric cars. There are a lot more affordable solar setups out there that are making a meaningful difference for a lot of people in a lot of different situations all over the world. There's also much more massive, huge solar setups as well. But I think we can kind of all get behind a technology making more sustainable energy more useful, more efficient, and more beautiful over time. I definitely learned a lot with this process, mostly in like how much electricity certain things specifically use, but also how much electricity a roof with solar panels on it can collect in different times of year, different seasons, and different situations. But I don't think I would change a thing. I don't think I would change anything in what I did, other than probably waiting like 6 months to get a little more of a federal tax credit. But I'll hit one last thing. It was briefly mentioned in like a Tesla earnings call, I think it was, that, or maybe Elon just said it randomly, but that Tesla vehicles in a year or two, by 2025, would all support bidirectional charging, which would be amazing. I don't know that that's actually going to happen, but having the cars be able to not just charge other cars, but even potentially serve as your house's backup battery would be pretty incredible. These car batteries, as we're learning, are already way bigger and can support way more power output than any power wall, any home battery. One Model S battery is equivalent to like 7 or 8 power walls. So who knows if Tesla actually does it or not, but as of today, with the right box on the wall, with the right inverter, the F-150 Lightning, which has an even bigger battery, can actually be your house's backup battery. So I think the number of EVs that support this feature should only be slowly going up. But I think ideally there's a world in the future where instead of needing like a huge, the current thing needing a big solar setup and all these fancy batteries, all you really need is a small solar array, an inverter, and your car battery. and you have the ability to be completely functional during any extended power outage or any emergency. Because we live in a world where there's another news story every week about the electrical grid being taxed and how these heat waves are running people's grids and air conditioners into the ground, and too much of it is causing blackouts and literally actually deaths. So any strain that we can take off the grid is a win. And anything we can do to operate on clean, sustainable energy is a win for everybody. So thanks for watching. I'll hang out in the comments for a while, but feel free to subscribe if you enjoyed videos like this and the amount of work that goes into these videos on any kind of bleeding edge tech and stuff like this in the future. And let me know what you're interested in seeing next in the comments. All right, catch you guys in the next one. Peace.